Hello, and welcome to Stow Talks, a podcast designed to support people going through a relationship breakdown and all of the challenges this brings. I'm Matthew Taylor.
And I'm Lisa Gatchell, family lawyers at Stow Family Law. And today we're looking at the pitfalls of DIY divorce. I would imagine a good place to start is to explain what we mean by DIY divorce. Do you want to do that for us, Matt?
Yeah. I mean, it's a little bit, to continue with the DIY theme, it's a little bit Ronseal, exactly what it says in the tin. So doing-it-yourself divorce, and it comes down to two elements. Three, I suppose. Your first point of call is doing the actual divorce yourself, you know, the legally stopping being married part. Then there's the finances, sorting out the finances yourself. And then there may be some sort of child arrangements chats that you can have to sort out children yourself. But essentially, avoiding lawyers, trying to sort it out all yourself, which there's a lot of good to be said about that. And even speaking as a lawyer, avoiding lawyers in life is probably something to be welcomed. But there are some problems. So we thought it'd just be helpful for people to have a conversation today to go through the pros and cons of the DIY divorce. So should we start with the actual divorce part then, Lisa? What does that involve? Should people be doing it? What should they look out for?
I mean, the divorce part itself has been streamlined and made much simpler following, I think it was April last year, wasn't it? April 2022,
yeah.
We brought in the no-fault divorce. So now it's all done online and it has pretty much been done with litigants in person. So people who are representing themselves through the proceedings with them in mind. So to an extent, I think the actual divorce process is pretty idiot-proof now. It's very much online.
I'm sure I could still make a mess of it.
It's very much online. It asks you a question, you answer the question, and you go through it. And I don't think there's not a huge number of people that necessarily have a problem completing the forms, but I think it's the implications of the different stages that I think we'll probably come back to in a minute, which perhaps isn't understood so much.
Yeah.
But the process and the actual completing the forms, I think, is fairly straightforward now. And, you know, I certainly have quite a lot of clients that will now do the main divorce part themselves, and they will just instruct me to help with the finances or the children issues that are going on side ancillary to that.
I have the same, and it's not for everyone. Absolutely, lawyers are still useful. You know, our divorce team lawyers at Stow Family Law are great at doing the process and taking the pressure off, and you don't have to, you know, work out the system at a time that's pretty stressful when you've got a million things going on. So, it is something that you can do yourself, but having lawyers help can be really useful.
And I think that's where some clients will say to me, look, I understand that I could do it myself, but I don't want to. I don't want to deal with the paperwork. I don't want to do the form filling. And like you say, there are still mistakes that can be made within completing those forms, and then trying to get those rectified further down the line can cost more money. There is, you know, absolutely still people that will want to have assistance with that.
And I think the big issue and the potential pitfall is where the divorce asks questions about the finances, and this is something that throws people all the time. So I still think of it as ticking the boxes at the end of the form, because we used to do these things by paper and tick boxes. But essentially the divorce process asks questions about whether you want to seek a financial order, and that can be something that's a bit confusing. If you put the wrong thing, it can, what it isn't about is starting court proceedings there and then to sort the finances. It's about giving the court the jurisdiction to then make financial orders at some point in the future. Often people don't tick them, and that can cause huge problems down the line, because if you go through your divorce and you remarry and you haven't ticked the boxes and haven't sorted your finances, then that creates a whole world of problems. So there are some technical issues as well. So there are pitfalls with that. But as you say, I think generally it's a more streamlined process, and I do think the government kind of portal thing works pretty well. But that brings us on, I guess, to the finances, and this is where family lawyers start, you know, clutching their chest and panic breathing when people I think talk about DIY financial settlements, don't they? That's what really gets us a bit nervous on clients' behalves.
Yeah, finances, and also the implications with inheritance and wills and things that the divorce can effectively produce without people realizing it. I mean, from the inheritance side of things, the concern is that once you have your final order, you're no longer married, you know, which means that, and we're not will solicitors, so I'll just caveat that right now. But it means that any provisions that you've made for your ex-spouse within your will no longer stand. And it may be that you still want some of those to stand. It may be that you're very amicable and you'd still like them to have the house or whatever it is. But you need to understand that they are effectively viewed as having died for the purpose of the wills. And then we also have issues with regards to pension claims and things. So if you get your final order and if you get your final order in the divorce and you don't yet have your financial order and your spouse dies and they were holding the bulk of the marital pensions, if you like, then their pensions die with them. So it can have quite significant and serious implications if it's not well thought through.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that what a lot of people will rightly try and do is say, well, we've got divorced and look, we've got a house and we've got some savings. We just need to divide those up and we're agreed about how we divide it up. So we'll just do that and move on with our lives. And that, I suppose, is okay if it works, but the potential for stuff going wrong is massive. And I've actually done quite a number of cases where there's been huge delay in bringing financial proceedings after divorce. So what always surprises people is that there is no long stop for sorting out finances after divorce. There is no limitation period, as there would be in the breach of contract. You know, limitation periods are commonly about 6 years to bring an action. If you don't do it then you lose the ability to do so. That doesn't apply with finances on divorce. And I've done cases where parties have divorced and then 20 years later, we're trying to sort out their finances. Mm-hmm. And they're hugely problematic, really difficult, because normally you separate and then you sort out the finances fairly soon after. So you're kind of looking at what the value of the assets are now, and there's not been any great change. So maybe there's a little bit of reflection of something that might have changed in the past 12 or 18 months, but that broadly they are what they were. That doesn't apply to cases that are, you know, sort of 8, 10, 15, 20 years later. So you're looking at the value of the assets now and the value of the assets at the time. And it can be really, really complicated and trying to work out. We've spoken before on these podcasts when we've gone through financial settlements and things that the court likes to, you know, the starting point is they're sharing claims for assets of the marriage, or if there's no sharing claims, or the sharing claims will be defeated by needs. So what you've got to go back and work out is, well, are there remaining sharing claims? And if so, how do they play against needs? And what were the assets at the time? And have they supported each other? Have they had intermingled finances since that point? And it becomes really, really complicated. And complicated cases are expensive cases, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So if you just sort it out yourself, if it works, then great. But you always leave yourself open to potential claims. You can't have pension claims without there being an order. So, you might choose to sell a house and split the equity 60-40, but you can't do that with a pension without a pension sharing order. And pensions are something that frequently get overlooked on sort of DIY divorce. So, I mean, Lisa, do you want to kind of chat through people very briefly the approach to pensions and why they are so problematic on kind of DIY divorces?
Yeah, I can do. I mean, I'm really surprised you're giving me the pension speech.
I'd give you the treat of getting to talk pensions, because it's normally my favourite thing.
Yeah, I mean, with pensions, as I say, one of the difficulties with pensions is that if you haven't sorted it out and you get your final order, or your decree absolute, and you're divorced, and you don't have your financial order and one of you dies, particularly if you are that person that was holding the one that was holding the large pensions, then those pensions effectively die with them. And what you've also got to appreciate is that once you've separated, you're continuing to make payments into those pensions. So those pensions are going to be increasing in value. So if you are then looking at divorce proceedings or financial proceedings sort of 10, 15, 20 years down the line, the value of the pension pot is going to be significantly more than it potentially was at the time of your separation. And I think what people have to understand is that whilst we can look at apportioning, so we can ask pension experts to look at the pensions and calculate how much of the pension was accrued during the marriage, pre-marriage, post-marriage, all of those types of things. Firstly, the more questions you have to ask a pension expert, the more it's going to cost you.
Yeah.
And secondly, just because X amount of the pension was accrued post-separation doesn't mean the court's going to discount it. The court will very much be looking at needs and income needs in retirement. And if the court feels that actually it still needs to effectively be a calculation for equality of income in retirement, then the court can very much still go down that route. And that can feel very unfair for the person that has been paying into that pension for a number of years post-separation, and is one of the reasons that you are much better off dealing with pensions at the time.
Yeah, and I think people also, there's something slightly weird psychologically about pensions, is lots of people don't consider them to be a matrimonial asset because they never form part of the day-to-day, unless you are actually receiving your pension. You know, for the bulk of people, they don't form part of everyday life. There's something that kind of goes into your payslip and disappears out, and then you ignore it for 10, 20, 30 years. So they're not thought of as being a matrimonial asset, but they are. And they're often very valuable assets. So what we do see on DOI divorces is that people who just haven't dealt with the pensions at all, or have said, well, I'll keep the house, you keep the pension. And in certain cases, that might be appropriate. But if you're dealing with, you know, final salary schemes, the common ones being NHS, teachers, civil service, police, army, fire brigade, you know, those big public sector pension providers, and there are some really good private schemes as well, the value that your pension appears to be worth in kind of capital cash terms kind of doesn't really mean anything. And you can't say, well, look, I've got my pension statement, it suggests my house is, you know, my pension's worth 100 grand and the house is worth 200 grand, so, you know, I'll keep that and that'll reduce, you know, whatever, and do it that way. That's just not going to deliver a fair outcome for a whole variety of reasons. And, you know, we did a really helpful podcast on pensions with Kerry Griffiths, so go and check that out in the feed, to get in some nitty gritty pension nerd chat, which is, you know, for me, really fun and interesting, but for everyone else, deeply boring, probably. But it's dead useful to know why that's problematic. And I think on DIY divorces, that because people aren't getting the advice about these techie, boring things, they're not finding out, are they? And they're sort of leaving those claims. And you could be leaving hundreds of thousands of pounds on the table.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is about getting that advice, isn't it? To make sure that actually, you know, we can't compare capital, so money in houses and savings and investments, pound for pound with pension assets. And, you know, as you rightly say, quite often people want to just offset and say, well, I'm going to keep the house and they can keep the pension. But there's often then little forethought as to their financial future. And actually, would they be better off doing that? Because it can have a real cliff edge effect when they hit retirement. And suddenly they, you know, they don't have an income coming from anywhere else other than state pension. And it means that whilst, you know, now things kind of stay the same a little bit so that they have that comfort, if you like, and security of that and maintaining the house, they are potentially going to be in a much worse situation further down the line that hasn't really been brought to their attention because they haven't had the advice from solicitors or financial advisors or financial planners, you know, people like Kerry Griffiths. They haven't been able to have that foresight to even think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just not in the sort of mental sphere that you're operating in at the time for a lot of people, because you focus on the here and now, and it's quite difficult without having someone to prompt you and say, well, hang on, have you thought through the practical implications of that? So, I mean, I think that probably summarizes some of the risks with DIY finances. There are numerous other issues, potentially about maintenance or what if someone receives bonuses or what if someone owns a company or all these things, and it can be really spiraling and difficult. Maybe let's just park that, though, without getting in tune to the nitty-gritty on finances, you know, because I think we both agree getting some legal advice on the finances is really vital, and we'll maybe come back to that in a minute. What about children, then? You know, is that something that's a bit more sensible to go down the DIY route?
With children, I think we've spoken about this on the podcast as well. There's no black and white answer as to what a child arrangement should be, and every family is completely different. So I think there is far more scope to sit round the kitchen table, have those discussions directly. And also we have a no order principle. So the court's not going to make any order in children's proceedings unless it's absolutely necessary. So for most people, actually, if they're able to agree their child arrangements, there is much more scope to do that. And if it works for them, nobody else is going to get involved.
Yeah, and I think that's the best way, frankly. If you can do it and you're comfortable with it and it's working for your kids and it works for your family, then that's almost certainly the right answer. And, you know, you might see a lawyer who might say, well, maybe it could be a bit different, but fundamentally, if it's working for you, it's working for you.
Yeah.
What I would say, though, is I've seen a lot of cases where people have reached an agreement. And then a few months later, it turns out that maybe the two ex-spouses actually had a different view on what that agreement really was, because it can be open to interpretation. So what I always encourage people to do is to have a look at drawing up a parenting plan. So if you search for parenting plan on Google, CAFCAS, who are the court-appointed social workers, effectively, have got an amazing template parenting plan, which asks you to fill in loads of stuff. So it's not just, you know, where are the kids on Tuesday night, Saturday night, whatever. It asks about everything. What you can do about schooling? What about religious events? What about holidays abroad? What about introducing to new partners? And you can go through quite a detailed plan and you make it absolutely suitable for you. Not every person needs to fill in every box, but I think that's a really good way to get people thinking about things other than the obvious. So that's something that I'd always recommend to people is, yes, do the DIY route, but why not use this parenting plan and get stuff kind of written down? And then if something's not working, you can go back to the parenting plan and say, okay, this is what we'd said. Should we carry on doing this? Or is it time to tweak the parenting plan and move things along a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure there are people that are listening to us right now saying, well, you're bound to say, go and get legal advice because you're lawyers, you know, you work for a law firm, you want to keep your jobs.
Yeah.
But I have no money. But I physically cannot afford to pay thousands and thousands of pounds in legal fees, which is what, you know, my neighbour and friend and colleague have all told me it's going to cost me. So what other options are there?
Yeah, I think that, look, legal fees can be expensive. And if you end up in fully contested financial remedy proceedings, it does cost thousands. It costs a lot of money. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of intellectual energy. It's a lot of effort. It will take a while. So, you know, that is a fact I'm not going to hide from. If you've at the point of a DIY divorce, though, and you think you've got an agreement, then that doesn't have to apply. There are plenty of lawyers, whether here at Stowe or plenty of good firms around the country, who will be able to provide an initial meeting. If you can get the money together for an initial meeting to sense check something, and someone can say, I think you're missing here, or actually that sounds about right, or here's what we recommend. If you, once you've come to the agreement, and now let's say that you're in a position where you've come to an agreement and you're now thinking, having heard what we're saying, oh God, I actually don't have anything written down. I don't have a consent order. I don't have this. What if so-and-so comes back for further claims in 20 years? You can get a lawyer to draw up a consent order for far less than your fictional neighbours are trying to tell you it's going to cost. Personally, I think that's a good use of money. If you can find the money to do it, to give you that peace of mind for the future, then that is absolutely a really valuable thing. And just to get that certainty and security and that sort of sanity check that you know that you're doing the right thing. There are other places. A lot of universities will do legal advice clinics. That's something worth looking at. So I'm in Liverpool. I know that Liverpool John Moores Uni, for example, do a really brilliant legal advice clinic for people that maybe can't afford fees. And they will get advice from some really talented law students who are operating under some supervisors. There are volunteer groups. There are all sorts of things. I mean, so there's normally someone somewhere out there for a lot of people if they're going down the DIY divorce route to save the money. So the thought of paying those fees can be really tricky. I mean, have you got any other suggestions, Lisa, about what people should do in those circumstances?
One of the things that I would always say is if you're starting to have discussions about finances, I think sitting down with a lawyer, and do you know what? You know, Stowe included, there are plenty of law firms that will do a hours fixed fee appointment so that you know exactly what your costs are. You know, we certainly do it. And I think that's invaluable right at the beginning, just so that you can talk through your individual circumstances with a solicitor and know what it is you need to be thinking about when it comes to reaching your agreement. And it may be that you can do that. You can then go away and have the discussions because you're now doing it from an informed place. And then you can come back to have that financial order drawn up. Because as we've said, it's really important that you're not just reaching an agreement, but that you've got that agreement in an order that's approved by the court so that it's binding on you both and it sort of prevents those future claims. I mean, other things to consider are mediation. So we've talked about mediation before. Mediation often works out much cheaper, I'll be honest, than lawyers when it comes to negotiating, because you are sat in a, ideally sat in a room together. So there's usually two or three sessions of mediation. It'll be very clear whether or not mediation is going to work or not, rather than, you know, lots of correspondence going backwards and forwards. But again, if you are thinking about settlements in mediation, it may also be quite advisable at that stage just to, again, check in with a lawyer. So kind of do it as a, you can do it as a pay as you go basis, if you like. So rather than kind of having the lawyer manage everything for you, it may be that you say, I would just like to have touch points with you. So I'd like to have a meeting with you at the start to find out what my parameters are and what I should be thinking about. I'd like to have a meeting with you in the middle of mediation so that we can go through some of the proposals that are being made and to see if there's anything that we're, you know, I'm missing or should be thinking about. And I would like to have a meeting with you afterwards once the settlement is made so that you, I can sense check it. So you can tell me whether or not you think it falls within that sort of realm of reasonableness and is likely to be approved by the court. And that is obviously going to be much cheaper to have those individual appointments at your request, if you like, than to have a lawyer who's managing everything for you. So there are certainly ways that you can still get that really good legal advice that you need at the right points without the cost having to escalate. You know, you can keep it under control.
Yeah. And something else to mention is there are a number of places who will offer one couple, one lawyer services. So this is where you and your spouse can go and have the same lawyer. So at the moment, so it's not something that, I do, that Stowe does, as at the time of recording, October 2023. So if someone says to me, I'm in agreement, can you do this for me and my wife? And I'll say, no, your wife needs independent legal advice because I'm not able to do that. There are certain organisations that will do it. I think there are pitfalls with those because you need to be absolutely sure that the agreement you've reached is fair. And if there's any form of conflict or if there's any form of non-disclosure or if there's any form of arguments, then that the firm is going to struggle because they're not going to be able to represent both you to their best interests. But if you've got something that's fairly straightforward and you don't want to have the, I think sometimes when clients say to me, or I don't want my spouse to know that I've come to see you because they're going to see red if they think that I'm taking legal advice, which is a common thing. And sometimes that could just be about fear or concern that the lawyer's going to ramp things up. That's a way to get around that. I don't think it's for everyone. It's just something that I think, it, you know, worth me flagging because it's another option. Mediation is absolutely something that we use a lot for this sort of thing. And, you know, I completely agree on that. I look at things in three ways. I think if budget's tight and you're trying to sort out the divorce and you're trying to sort out finances and trying to sort out the children, Lisa, where would you put the money? You know, what do you think should be the focus?
The finances, 100%. But I mean, playing devil's advocate here a little bit, I suppose. What if I said, okay, I hear what you say, but I know what your fees are. And there's a online company that's offering to do a financial order for me for £150 or whatever it is. That's a figure that I've just picked out of thin air, but a fraction of the cost. What would you say? Have you had any experience of these?
Yeah, I've had the experience with then trying to unpick problems caused by them further down the line. Look, I'm sure that there are some of these companies, and I'm not going to speak about individual companies because I can't and it's not fair. There are some companies who provide a great service and there'll be some people who get a really good outcome from that. I think you need to be wary about going for the cheapest option. I appreciate that's easy for me to say, and lots of people are in a position where they really have to go for the cheapest option. But I think that is incredibly cheap and would leave me thinking, well, what are they not doing for the money that they're not charging? So I think anything that advertises themselves as, you know, quickie divorce, that's a common phrase, isn't it? It's a bit Daily Mail sidebar of shame. You know, quickie divorce or the sort of cheapest thing, I don't know, it might be good. I'm not going to sit here and criticize people, but and firms, but I have seen orders where people said, I had this order made a few years ago, we've now got this problem, can you have a look at it? And it makes me do that builder's short intake of breath thing of so it can be problematic and I won't get sucked in by that. As I'd say, I think you're better going to a family law specialist, paying a, you know, for a fixed fee initial meeting. And yes, I probably would say that because that's the sort of thing that I do day in, day out. But I think there are pitfalls and concerns about that, really. But I'd agree that if you're going to put the money somewhere, it's in the finances, there are more things that can go wrong. I think the court and the family system, family justice system, and me as an individual lawyer want to encourage people to reach arrangements for children themselves, and provided there are no safeguarding issues, and hopefully most people should be able to. Divorce is doable yourself, but lots of people won't want to, and there are a couple of pitfalls, but that is manageable and is designed to be navigable, doing it in person. But the finances is where lots of, you know, bear traps lie, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just a final thing to kind of signpost, I guess, before we sign off on this is Stowe website has numerous resources for people doing things in person. We've done a podcast on, you know, litigant in person guide to court. Do have a look at that. And if you go to Stowe support, that provides all the amazing content from Stowe lawyers, divorce coaches, financial advisors, you name it, about various different things. So if you've got a question, a query on something, some particular aspect of something that you're trying to do yourself, it may be that there's something there. So have a look at that, and that should point you in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've got sort of episode 14. I think we went through doing a divorce. We had a chat about doing the divorce side of things. So definitely check that out if you're thinking about doing it yourself. And also episode 18 was on mediation. So we've talked about that, and we go into that a bit more detail there. So that's it for this episode of Stowe Talks. Thanks for listening. If you would like more information on our podcast, head over to stowetalks.co.uk, and please rate, like, share, and review this podcast where you can.